For most of us, mathematics is a wholly practical field of study. It allows us to count and to account. How much material do I need for my home improvement project? What's my checkbook balance? Is my business profitable? How do I make a recipe for four into a recipe for six? Is it wise to invest in this or that mutual fund? Yet mathematicians tend to have a far loftier view of their field, reflecting on the beauty and the wonder of numbers. The mathematician does not study pure mathematics because it is useful, wrote mathematician J.H. Poincaré. He studies it because he delights in it, and he delights in it because it is beautiful. This is Dr. Jim Tonkowicz, your host for the Wyoming Catholic College Great Books Podcast. Joining me to discuss Euclid and the beauty of numbers is mathematician and associate professor of mathematics and natural sciences at Wyoming Catholic College, Dr. Scott Olson. Dr. Olson studied physics as an undergraduate and then received a PhD in applied mathematics from the University of Maryland at College Park. Prior to teaching at Wyoming Catholic College, he was a senior research scientist at the Human Language Technology Center of Excellence at Johns Hopkins University. Welcome, Dr. Olson. What drew you to the study of mathematics?
Well, actually, I suppose I kind of fell into it by accident. I was studying physics as an undergraduate, and of course, there's a lot of mathematics in physics, but it's not really mathematics for the sake of mathematics. Of course, it's for the sake of solving problems about the natural world. So I was exposed to a fair bit of mathematics there, decided to study applied mathematics in grad school, and again, it was, from the perspective of an outsider, it sort of might seem like mathematics, but again, it's more mathematics for the sake of something else. In that case, it was for the sake of studying certain problems in processing human language. But again, it exposed me sort of accidentally to mathematics, particularly statistics. And then it was really actually from coming here that I had an opportunity to really focus on mathematics for the sake of mathematics, mm-hmm. as opposed to to solve some engineering task or to answer a question about electricity and magnetism or something like that.
You and I have talked about the beauty of mathematics, and is that what you kind of discovered, the beauty of what?
Yeah, that's right. That it's exhilarating just for its own sake. That although it was tremendously useful in sort of an engineering environment, that it's much more satisfying in the long run to do it for its own sake. Yeah. And that's something that has to be discovered, so.
Leonard Edelman, a mathematician at the University of Southern California, commented, quote, "Mathematics is less related to accounting than it is to philosophy, and others have compared it to poetry." Is that how you see mathematics, and how does it fit into a liberal arts education?
Yeah, I think that's an apt comparison. Of course, it's not quite philosophy and it's not quite poetry, but what it is I think that's sort of brought out by those comments, is it's a fundamentally human activity. You get the impression, if you think of mathematics as accounting, that it's the sort of thing that a computer might do or a robot might do. And in fact, it involves quite a bit of intuition and discipline and wrong ideas, crazy guesses that don't go anywhere, a sense for what's beautiful and not what's not beautiful. All those things are kind of wrapped up into the actual day-to-day experience of doing mathematics.
Can you give us an example of something that's beautiful in mathematics?
Something that's beautiful in mathematics. Well, yeah, sure. Here's a simple example, I think, or something that happens all the time in mathematics. I don't know if you'll think it's beautiful or not, but I think it's beautiful. I think it's incredibly striking that when we make claims about, say, the natural numbers, we do it not for some particular natural numbers, but we can often do it for all the numbers. Which is to say that mathematics is constantly dealing with things which are, you know, with sets that are infinite. And yet we can say something definite about those things. So we can say something definite about something that's fundamentally indefinite. Which is the sort of thing, again, that, you know, it's a distinctly human activity. For example, you know, one example is just that we can say that there are infinitely many primes. And we don't think that there might be infinitely many primes. We actually know that there are infinitely many primes. Or if I say something about, say, the sum, a simple example, if I say something about the sum of the first n integers, I'm not making a claim about a sum of, say, 5 or 10 of the first n integers, or the first integers. I'm making a claim about the sum of the first n integers for every n, mm-hmm. right? I'm making a claim about all possible sums of first integers, which is to say that I'm making a definite claim about something that's not definite. Does that make sense?
Yeah, well, you're making universal claims.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mathematics makes universal claims about things.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Universal claims about things which at first glance seem like they should be maybe inaccessible to us. But in fact, we can say an awful lot about infinity, which is quite striking, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you teach your students here at Wyoming Catholic College, well, first of all, how did you end up coming to Wyoming Catholic College mm-hmm. from doing what you had been doing?
Yeah, so actually, funnily enough, what really attracted me to the college was Latin, not mathematics, because I have a real love for Latin. And I realized that typically in academia, you know, the intellectual life is fairly narrow. You know, if you're someone who's focusing on mathematics, you also should not be someone who's focusing on Latin. There's a sort of walls that are set up between departments, and so it was very attractive to me that at WCC I could be someone who was in love with mathematics but also in love with Latin. You know, that I could begin a class where, you know, in a typical day I might begin a class with a Latin prayer, and so there, you know, we're talking about God, which is also something that's wonderful at WCC. But we'd begin a class with a Latin prayer, and then we might take a moment just to note some things about the Latin, and then move into the mathematics. And there's no artificial division in the intellectual life between mathematics and anything else. So that was really exciting about WCC.
Now, as you teach your students here, what do you hope they're going to gain from their classes here in math?
Well,
obviously more than just the ability to compute.
Yeah, I think, I mean, every class at WCC, I think, is ordered to the students being happy. That's what the classes are always about. And that's what the mathematics classes are about. What students don't realize when they come here, and what's sort of kind of exciting about teaching math here, is that people don't realize that mathematics is something that can make them happy, right? They can make them happy to do something that's just really exciting. It's kind of, it's like walking on the edge of an intellectual cliff. You know, you don't know what's gonna happen sometimes. It's not at all like solving problems in Saxon algebra or, you know, some kind of rote repetition of long division problems or something like that. That's not at all what mathematics actually feels like. Typically, I pose a question to the students. I say, you know, here's an interesting question I asked the students the other day. We were talking about prime numbers and the infinity of prime numbers. And I asked, do you suppose that for any integer n, you could find a sequence of n consecutive integers such that all of them are composite? And what that would mean is, by composite, I mean not prime, that they're divisible by one or more prime numbers. So what that would mean is there could be patches of sort of these prime deserts in the integers where you could find maybe 1,000 consecutive integers such that none of them are prime. And if you could do this for an arbitrary integer n, it means that I could find a place where there were maybe 100 billion integers in a row such that none of them were prime, or 100 billion to the 100 billionth power integers in a row such that none of them were prime, right? And in fact, 100 billion to the 100 billionth power is a rather small integer. It's quite small when you consider that basically all of the integers are much larger than it. Right? Infinity is really big.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a sloppy way of saying, right? So that's an exhilarating question, you know, to think that there could be these places where there are infinitely many primes, but there are also these deserts that are as large as you could like where there are no primes. Well, how would we prove something like that? You know, that's an exciting question, which would really get you thinking. How would you do something like that? And you know, a good question like that, typically the students have no idea where to start. But you know, gradually you try some things, some things that don't work, you have some ideas, and eventually you can do it, and that's just exhilarating. You know, it's a little adventure. So that's what mathematics really feels like. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what the everyday experience of it feels like, I think.
Now, one of the texts the students study at Wyoming Catholic is Euclid's Elements. Could you tell us something about that and why that's important?
Sure, yeah. Until quite recently, it was the text that mathematicians and lay people read as an introduction to mathematics. So, of course, it's incredibly influential historically. But what it does, if you're not familiar with it, it lays out from first principles an introduction to geometry in the plane, and then solid geometry. And it's also an introduction to number theory that was known at the time of Euclid, so around 300 BC. But yeah, it's an amazing work. Unfortunately, you hear Euclidean geometry and you probably think whatever you did in high school, which was Euclidean the geometry in the sense that it was geometry reasoning from first principles. You might have proved some of the things that Euclid proved, like the Pythagorean theorem. But the Elements is just full of all kinds of beautiful proofs that you might not have seen. And it goes quite a bit farther, of course, than students typically do in high school. In fact, for example, he proves the infinity of primes in his number theory book. So.
Well, I know I took geometry, and it was a dumbed down Euclid is what it was. Mm-hmm. It was Euclid for high school students. And I found that there was something very, very beautiful about the proofs, that the proofs actually worked.
Yeah.
And,
yeah, that's
and
right.
And they built on one another.
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's right. I mean, I think for a lot of students, they discover in high school maybe, or more maybe coming here, that they actually like mathematics by doing Euclid, because that kind of axiomatic reasoning is their first real taste of what mathematics might feel like. Now, I want to go further, of course, and say that the everyday experience of mathematics is different than simply reading other people's mathematics, right? So, do you see what I mean by that? That is to say that when you're doing mathematics, you might get the sense from reading Euclid that mathematics is just this chain of sort of demonstrative reasoning where everything necessarily follows from the previous thing, and there's never any uncertainty, and everything just sort of, you know, rolls out nicely. But in fact, when you're doing mathematics, you have no idea what the next step is. You have no idea what the construction is. You don't even know if your theorem's true, right? You have an idea. At one point, right, Euclid didn't know. I mean, Euclid was collecting these theorems, but we might imagine, for example, that Euclid might not have known whether or not the Pythagorean theorem was true, right? He had a hunch that it was true. He saw a lot of examples. He had reasons to believe it was true, but he had to sit down and say, is this true or not? You know, and how would I know it in such a way that I could make the argument to someone else, you know, and they would have to assent to that argument. So that's the part where intuition is necessary and some kind of creative spark. That's the human part of the activity.
Mm. So. Yeah. How would our listeners sort of get in on this side of mathematics, this more exciting, beautiful, poetic side of math?
I think the main thing is you just have to give it a shot. That's what most people don't do, I think. You know, pick up something that's worth reading, maybe get a copy of The Elements, for example, and just begin reading it. But read it in sort of a playful, leisurely kind of way. You know, don't read it because the taskmaster is standing behind you with his whip. Which is the experience you might have had in high school, right? With 25 problems to turn in for the next day. Read it just because it's beautiful and you're going to kind of explore the ideas and see what happens. When he asserts something about, during his argument, you should stop and say, well, do I think that's right? And get out your piece of paper and a pencil and convince yourself that every step of the argument is right. So, and you have to play with it. you know, mathematics is really is about play with quantity. So,
very helpful. Good. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Olson. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, it was a pleasure. Thank you.
No one will deny that we should all learn math because it's extremely useful and because the process of learning math increases our ability to reason carefully and logically. But as Dr. Olson discovered, there is also a beauty, what has also been called an elegance, inherent in mathematics. A beauty and an elegance that perhaps we who are not mathematicians should try to glimpse, at least a little. Thank you for listening, and let me encourage you to subscribe to this Wyoming Catholic College Great Books podcast. There are more great books and great ideas we'll be exploring from week to week. For Wyoming Catholic College, I'm Dr. Jim Tonkowicz.